Chapter 10. Inquiry. In truth, nobody inquired much. There were rumors of a missing trading pra belonging to Minato, but they were vague and remained mysterious. Babalichai told a story which, it must be said in justice to Padalolo's knowledge of the world, was not believed. When the Raja ventured to state his doubts, Babalichai asked him in tones of calm remonstrance whether he could reasonably suppose that two oldish men who had only one eye amongst them, and a young woman, were likely to gain possession of anything whatever by violence. Charity was a virtue recommended by the Prophet. There were charitable people, and their age, and was open to the deserving. Padalolo wagged his aged head doubtingly, and Babalichai withdrew with a shocked mien, and put himself forthwith under Lakamba's protection. The two men who completed the pra's crew followed him into that magnate's campong. The blind Omer, with Asa, remained under the care of the Raja, and the Raja confiscated the cargo. The pra hauled upon the mud bank, at the junction of the two branches of the Pantai, rotted in the rain, warped in the sun, fell to pieces and gradually vanished into the smoke of household fires of the settlement. Only a forgotten plank and a rib or two, sticking neglected in the shiny ooze for a long time, served to remind Babalichai during many months that he was a stranger in the land. Otherwise, he felt perfectly at home in Lakamba's establishment, where his peculiar position and influence were quickly recognized, and soon submitted to even by the women. He had all a true vagabond's pliability to circumstances and adaptiveness to momentary surroundings. In his readiness to learn from experience, that contempt for early principles so necessary to a true statesman, he equaled the most successful politicians of any age, and he had enough persuasiveness and firmness of purpose to acquire a complete mastery over Lakamba's vacillating mind, where there was nothing stable but an all-pervading discontent. He kept the discontent alive, he rekindled the expiring ambition, he moderated the poor exile's not unnatural impatience to attain a high and lucrative position. He, the man of violence, deprecated the use of force, for he had a clear comprehension of the difficult situation. From the same cause, he, the hater of white men, would to some extent admit the eventual expediency of Dutch protection. But nothing should be done in a hurry. Whatever his master Lakamba might think, there was no use in poisoning old Padalolo, he maintained. It could be done, of course. But what then? As long as Lingard's influence was paramount, as long as Elmer, Lingard's representative, was the only great trader of the settlement, it was not worth Lakamba's while, even if it had been possible, to grasp the rule of the young state. Killing Elmer and Lingard was so difficult, and so risky, that it might be dismissed as impracticable. What was wanted was an alliance. Somebody to set up against the white men's influence, and somebody who, while favorable to Lakamba, would at the same time be a person of a good standing with the Dutch authorities. A rich and considered trader was wanted. Such a person, once firmly established in Sambor, would help them to oust the old Raja, to remove him from power, or from life, if there was no other way. Then it would be time to apply to the Orang Blanda for a flag, for a recognition of their meritorious services, for that protection which would make them safe forever. The word of a rich and loyal trader would mean something with the ruler down in Batavia. The first thing to do was to find such an ally, and to induce him to settle in Sambor. A white trader would not do. A white man would not fall in with their ideas, would not be trustworthy. The man they wanted should be rich, unscrupulous, have many followers, and be a well-known personality in the islands. Such a man might be found amongst the Arab traders. Lingard's jealousy, said Babalichai, kept all the traders out of the river. Some were afraid, and some did not know how to get there. Others ignored the very existence of Sambor. A good many did not think it worth their while to run the risk of Lingard's enmity for the doubtful advantage of trade with a comparatively unknown settlement. The great majority were undesirable or untrustworthy. And Babalichai mentioned regretfully the men he had known in his young days. Wealthy, resolute, courageous, reckless, ready for any enterprise. But why lament the past, and speak about the dead? There is one man living great not far off. Such was Babalatchi's line of policy laid before his ambitious protector. Lakamba assented, his only objection being that it was very slow work. In his extreme desire to grasp dollars and power, the unintellectual exile was ready to throw himself into the arms of any wandering cutthroat whose help could be secured, and Babalichai experienced great difficulty in restraining him from unconsidered violence. It would not do to let it be seen that they had any hand in introducing a new element into the social and political life of Sambar. There was always a possibility of failure, and in that case Lingard's vengeance would be swift and certain. No risk should be run. They must wait. Meantime he pervaded the settlement, squatting in the course of each day by many household fires, testing the public temper and public opinion, and always talking about his impending departure. At night he would often take Lakamba's smallest canoe and depart silently, to pay mysterious visits to his old chief on the other side of the river. Omer lived in odor of sanctity under the wing of Padalolo. Between the bamboo fence, enclosing the houses of the Raja, and the wild forest, there was a banana plantation, and on its further edge stood two little houses built on low piles under a few precious fruit trees that grew on the banks of a clear brook, which, bubbling up behind the house, ran in its short and rapid course down to the big river. Along the brook a narrow path led through the dense second growth of a neglected clearing to the banana plantation, and to the houses, in it which the Raja had given for residence to Omer. The Raja was greatly impressed by Omer's ostentatious piety, by his oracular wisdom, by his many misfortunes, by the solemn fortitude with which he bore his affliction. Often the old ruler of Sambar would visit informally the blind Arab and listen gravely to his talk during the hot hours of an afternoon. In the night, Babalichai would call, and interrupt Omer's repose, unrebuked. Asa, standing silently at the door of one of the huts, could see the two old friends as they sat very still by the fire in the middle of the beaten ground between the two houses, talking in an indistinct murmur far into the night. She could not hear their words, but she watched the two formless shadows curiously. Finally Babalichai would rise, and, taking her father by the wrist, would lead him back to the house, arrange his mats for him, and go out quietly. Instead of going away, Babalichai, unconscious of Asa's eyes, often sat again by the fire, in a long and deep meditation. Asa looked with respect on that wise and brave man she was accustomed to see at her father's side, as long as she could remember sitting alone and thoughtful in the silent night by the dying fire, his body motionless, and his mind wandering in the land of memories, or who knows, perhaps groping for a road in the waste spaces of the uncertain future. Babalichai noted the arrival of Willems with alarm at this new accession to the white men's strength. Afterwards he changed his opinion. He met Willems one night on the path leading to Omer's house, and noticed later on, with only a moderate surprise, that the blind Arab did not seem to be aware of the new white man's visits to the neighborhood of his dwelling. Once, coming unexpectedly in the daytime, Babalichai fancied he could see the gleam of a white jacket in the bushes on the other side of the brook. That day he watched Asa pensively as she moved about preparing the evening rice, but after a while he went hurriedly away before sunset, refusing Omer's hospitable invitation, in the name of Allah, to share their meal. That same evening he startled Lakamba by announcing that the time had come at last to make the first move in their long-deferred game. Lakamba asked excitedly for explanation. Babalichai shook his head and pointed to the flitting shadows of moving women, and to the vague forms of men sitting by the evening fires in the courtyard. Not a word would he speak here, he declared. But when the whole household was reposing, Babalichai and Lakamba passed silent amongst sleeping groups to the riverside, and, taking a canoe, paddled off stealthily on their way to the dilapidated guard hut in the old rice clearing. There they were safe from all eyes and ears, and could account, if need be, for their excursion by the wish to kill a deer, the spot being well known as the drinking place of all kinds of game. In the seclusion of its quiet solitude, Babalichai explained his plan to the attentive Lakamba. His idea was to make use of Willems for the destruction of Lingard's influence. "I know the white men, Tuan," he said, in conclusion. "In many lands have I seen them, always the slaves of their desires, always ready to give up their strength and their reason into the hands of some woman. The fate of the believers is written by the hand of the Mighty One, but they who worship many gods are thrown into the world with smooth foreheads, for any woman's hand to mark their destruction there. Let one white man destroy another. The will of the Most High is that they should be fools. They know how to keep faith with their enemies, but towards each other they know only deception. I have seen. He stretched himself full length before the fire, and closed his eye in real or simulated sleep. Lakamba, not quite convinced, sat for a long time with his gaze riveted on the dull embers. As the night advanced, a slight white mist rose from the river, and the declining moon, bowed over the tops of the forest, seemed to seek the repose of the earth, like a wayward and wandering lover who returns at last, to lay his tired and silent head on his beloved's breast. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.